Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
And we're back once again on the last round here for episode 96. Thanks again for joining us, whether you're listening on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Boxing Socials, YouTube. One day, I just need to say one of those random podcasts that we have. One of those random podcast platforms that we have, because every time I look at the list, I feel like there's more. Am I wrong, Mike?
No, you're right. There was another one the other day that popped up that we applied for and I think got accepted on another podcast platform. And there's that Indian one that we're on.
Well, India is a big market. There's a lot of people.
Right? Yeah.
Hopefully they like boxing and they're listening to us. But, you know, just repeating myself, thanks again for joining us, guys. No guests this week. We decided not to have a guest this week as there's quite a bit of boxing actually happening, especially with the last week in the news and with events and stuff like that, especially with the whole Canelo DAZN thing, which was a big hot topic, especially because Canelo's involved, DAZN, Golden Boy, and all that stuff, which we'll touch on that a little bit later. But jumping right into it, this past Saturday from the 12th of September from your call in London on BT Sport, Anthony Yarde gets the 6-round TKO over Deck Spellman. Yarde hadn't had a serious fight since August 2019, which is, I believe, when he lost to Kovalev. But he actually had pretty good moments against Kovalev. There was a moment, a round or two in that fight against Kovalev in Russia, where Yarde looked like he was about to take him out. Kovalev looked like he was dead tired, and he was just kind of running on fumes. But he was able to survive, and then Kovalev was able to get the victory out in the end. But what did you think of Yarde's performance, Mike?
Good performance, you know, in spells. I don't think Deck Spellman's, you know, ever going to win a world title, but, you know, he was a hard guy. You could see that Yarde was kind of collecting the rounds. You know, early on, I thought Deck Spellman actually probably won the first round. Then Yarde kind of, I don't know whether because he'd been off for so long and he wanted to just to get a few rounds in, you know, just get some bit more exposure, a bit more time under the lights. But, you know, eventually he wore him down and maybe a little bit of a premature stoppage. I think, you know, Yarde was going to finish him off, but, you know, Spellman kind of beat the count. The referee looked at him and waved him off, and Spellman was kind of a little bit pissed off, I think that was the first time he'd actually ever been stopped. You know, he'd lost, but he'd never actually been stopped. So I think that was something, you know, he'd rather have, you know, either have got knocked out or, you know, lost on points, you know, kind of go out on his shield. But, you know, I think the question really is, you know, where does Yarde go from here? Is he going to go back down the WBO route? You know, he's not in an easy division. You know, you've got those big names, you know, Kovalev still around, Bivol, obviously, Atabedebiev, who's actually just, you know, broke his ribs and his fight has got cancelled. Gilberto Ramirez, somebody.
That's what I was thinking of too, just because I feel like a fight between Ramirez and Anthony Yarde would actually be a pretty good competitive fight. I think so. I think they're both matched up pretty evenly just by the eye test. I mean, what do you think?
No, I agree. You know, Ramirez, I think it'd be a very good test for Ramirez. Probably be, you know, his toughest test because, you know, Yarde's, you know, big tough guy. He'll get in there. You know, he's showed his pedigree against Kovalev, where I think if you look at Ramirez, you know, he's, what, 40-0, I think, and he's never really faced anybody of note. I think we probably both agree on that. I like, you know, Joe Smith Jr. I think that would be a good war, but I think, you know, with Joe Smith Jr. winning his last fight, he's put himself, you know, in like in a mandatory position. I don't know whether he'd really want to, you know, drop back down to face something a bit like Yarde. Callum Johnson, I like that as a British dust-up. You know, Callum's been up there, you know, fought Bedebiev, you know, come unstuck against him. But I think that would still be another test for Yarde.
Right.
You know, because in my opinion, Yarde's kind of got a very odd resume. He's got a lot of, you know, D-level and C-level fighters, and then he just jumped up and fought Kovalev, who's probably an A-class fighter, and then he's just gone back down again, and now he's fighting guys again that really he should beat. You know, there's never really been a steady progression. You know, he's never been like D, C, gone up to B, you know, earned himself a mandatory position, then for the A-level fighter. So interesting to see, you know, which route they go down, you know, him and Tunde Ajayi.
I think Anthony Yard's still in a good position, even though he did lose last year to Sergey Kovalev. And I think he had another fight earlier this year, just before COVID. You know, he got the win there, but it wasn't anybody significant, just to kind of get him back in the rhythm. But I like Yard. I think he's still got a lot left ahead of him. Like we just touched on, Gilberto Ramirez, I think, would be a good fight. Bivol, I think, would be a good fight, even though Bivol is a world champion. Bivol's in a, you know, in terms of Bivol, Bivol's in a tough spot, man. Like, he's obviously a good fighter. He's a world champion, but like, he just doesn't bring anything to the table in terms of the money and the business aspect, which is why nobody wants to, he can't secure a big name opponent or somebody who's, you know, who would help make money with him. Like, he's in a tough spot, but in terms of Yard, I think he's still got a lot left ahead of him, excuse me. Especially if Sergey Kovalev is, I mean, has he officially retired, right? I know recently out here in Southern California, his assault charge in the county of San Bernardino, I think, just got dismissed or something like that. I saw recent news about that where it just got dismissed or something like that. So he doesn't have to go to trial for that or something like that. Don't quote me on that, but I believe I saw something about that. I don't think he's necessarily retired or he's announced that he's retired, but I mean, I think both you and I know that Kovalev isn't going to be the same. So Yard, I think at this point, is in a better position in the light heavyweight division than Sergey Kovalev is. What do you think?
I'd agree with that. I think, you know, Kovalev, with the rumored DAZN deal he signed for the Canelo fight, I believe he got that. And then, you know, like a comeback fight was part of the deal. So I'm sure he's probably got at least one more well-paid fight from, you know, DAZN. So I'm sure we'll see him back against what kind of caliber of opponent. I don't know. You know, is he just going to cash out? You know, he's been at the pinnacle twice. So probably come back one last payday and then, you know, that's all we'll see from him.
Never know. Maybe Yard will want a rematch against Kovalev, and I think Yard would be the favorite this time, but we'll see. Also moving on that card, Mark Heffron, hopefully I pronounced that right, 25-1-1, fights to a draw, a 10-round draw with Denzel Bentley, like the car. What'd you think about this matchup, Mike?
Close fight, depending on what style you like. I think, you know, looking at the Twitter, you know, some people had Heffron in. You know, he'd come in, throw some good blows, come forward fighter, where, you know, Denzel Bentley was more of your slick backup fighter, worked on his back foot, came in with some good shots. So it really depended on what kind of style you liked, because everyone seemed to, you know, pick, you know, one and then somebody else would pick the other. So, you know, I think a rematch should probably be the right thing so we can get a winner. I think Frank Warren on the show afterwards kind of said that, you know, that it was a close fight and really a pick 'em. So, you know, let's do it again.
Really a pick 'em. Also on that card, Eskal Usman, I hope I pronounced that right, remains undefeated with the 10-round unanimous decision win over Cedric Paynod, who has 8 wins and 8 losses and 3 draws. Did I read that right?
Yep. 8-8-3.
Right?
Yep.
8-8-3. What'd you think about Essamon's performance, his unanimous decision win?
I thought it was a good performance. You know, Paynew, I think everyone will kind of remember him for his couple of fights that he had with Conor Benn, when I think everyone thought that he won the first, but Conor Benn kind of got a bit of home cooking, and then, you know, they fought again. Good, tough, tricky opponent. I thought Essamon did pretty well. You know, he kind of needs to move on fast, because, if you know, 31 years old, kind of turned pro late, has a good amateur record, so he's got a good bit of pedigree there. But, you know, from that performance, I don't know, it's kind of looking like he's maybe more of a domestic fighter, maybe European. I don't know if we're going to see him up in the you know, the world market. But, you know, Paynew, good solid fighter. I think, you know, we'd see him used again on the, you know, the Matchroom and Frank Warren shows.
Yeah, we'll see. You're right. You're right. Also, Ed Harrison gets the points victory.
Points victory over four rounds against Muhammad Bilal Ali.
Yeah, I wasn't about to try that name. That's why I hesitated, because I was trying to pronounce it in my head. So right here it says a referee score was 39-37 for Harrison, who's a 26-year-old club fighter who's now 2-4 with zero KOs, and had a notable upset over the 24-year-old prospect Ali, who suffers his first professional loss early in his career. So he could still rebound, obviously, if he's still dedicated after that. What'd you think about Ali's first loss, even though he's an early professional career guy, and Harrison, I guess, getting the upset?
It's just cool. It's kind of strange. You know, Ali looked in parts like he kind of, you know, was a, you know, fluid, kind of solid fighter. He'd pick his shots well, but, you know, every time that Harrison kind of really put the pressure on him, you know, Ali just wanted to grab him and tie up. And actually he lost a point, I think, and it was in the second round for that. The referee kind of got sick of him, or was just tying up and grabbing a hold of him. I don't know whether it's lack of sparring, whether, you know, he just needs to do some more sparring to, you know, be used to people putting the pressure on him instead of, you know, him being the forward fighter. I thought it was, you know, kind of funny at the end that the referee had obviously given his card in and announced Harrison as the winner, but the announcer, for some reason, announced Muhammad Bilali as the winner at the end. The referee had to go over and tell him, like, no, that's the wrong guy.
Come on.
Kind of made for a funny moment.
I mean, that's always going to happen in especially in boxing. Boxing and MMA, you would think, just because it's, you have to rely on one person. And usually, most of the time, the announcer gets it, I would say, 98% right most of the time. But there is that one time that it happens in, when it's a major fight and it's got a lot of eyeballs, that people are like, oh my God. You know, I remember, wasn't there one with Michael Buffer where he announced somebody as a, I think it was a fight in, I don't know if it was England or somewhere over there in Europe. Do you remember that?
I know he's done it a few times when people are coming out, you know, he's pronounced their names wrong, or he said the same person twice.
Right.
You know, he does seem to make a few more mistakes, you know, in his later years.
Yeah. He's still really good though. He still, you know, sets the bar, but you know, it does happen. It still does happen here and there. So, also rounding off that card in another four rounder, Joshua Frankham gets his first professional win with unanimous decision over Kevin McCauley. What'd you think about Joshua's performance?
I thought he looked good. You know, he kind of got signed to Frank Warren. He's the cousin of Tyson Fury, and Tyson Fury told Frank Warren, you know, how good he was and has an eye for potential. So, you know, Frank listened to him and signed him up. I thought McCauley, the opponent, did well. You know, he's 15, got 208 losses and 12 draws. So, you know, he's obviously a good, solid journeyman. He kind of went in there, gave Frankham a good four rounds. Frankham's from a fight family. You've got Charlie Frankham is also signed to Frank Warren. So, you know, good four rounds early on in his career. Hard to really tell, you know, when he's fighting a journeyman. You just have to just wait and see. Look, he looked good though.
Right. Yeah, hopefully. Still early. Still extremely early, the earliest you can be in your professional career. Moving on, also this past Saturday from the bubble's still going. It's been going on for months at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas on ESPN. Mean Machine Kavalauskas gets the eighth round TKO over Michael Zuski. This was for the vacant WBC Americas title, which is, I don't even think we should even mention these titles anymore, especially when it's not a world title. They're like so, I feel like it changes every single time with these less than world titles, but you know, I digress. This fight, I don't know about you, Mike, but this up until the TKO, this was a close fight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what'd you think?
No, I agree. Afterwards, Cal Moretti from Top Rank actually put a snapshot of the cards, which had two of the judges had Zuski ahead, 67-65. And then the third judge actually had Kavalauskas, 67-65. So, you know, that just goes to show it was it was a close fight. And I thought early on, you know, Cal Velasquez was having, you know, some luck. You know, he looked like he was getting through with those hooks. Zuski went to his corner. I don't know whether his corner told him or whether, you know, he just noticed. He changed his style, came out, kept the right hand higher to stop Cal Velasquez coming through with those left hooks. And, you know, he just was boxing from the outside. You know, Cal Velasquez just liked to come forward, you know, to try to land those big, heavy shots. So it was a very good tactical fight, but eventually, you know, Cal Velasquez just managed to wear him down with those thudding shots. Man, you could hear, with no crowd there, you could just hear how hard Cal Velasquez hits.
Right.
You know, people may remember him, you know, from he was a former Terence Crawford opponent.
Right. He knocked him down, too.
Where they just used to call him Mean Machine because nobody could pronounce his last name.
Mark.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he knocked Crawford down as well. And then he also knocked him down again when it was, I think it was an actual knockdown, but they called it a slip.
Yeah, but he did get knocked down. He did.
Yeah.
So
it's just where to go from here. You know, he won that fight, picked up a lesser WBC belt, but he's a top-ranked fighter.
Well, yeah, but you don't think that Top Rank is still keeping him active and hope that he gets more wins? Because, and you know, from their perspective, from their angle, for Crawford, it's smart because it gives them something to at least have, like, as a plan B. If they put out Mean Machine out there a couple more times or one more time and he gets a notable win over a better name or something like that, and Crawford obviously can't get a fight with Brooke, obviously he hasn't had anything announced. Or if he fights Brooke or what have you, Top Rank can rely on Mean Machine again and be like, oh, the rematch, Mean Machine's even better prepared this time. And the only reason because they would entertain a rematch is because, one, like you said, Mean Machine is now a Top Rank fighter. I'm sure he has an agreement with them for a couple fights. And they need an option for Crawford again because they have limited options with him. And he's a world champion. Like, Crawford's a world champion. So I honestly think that their Top Rank is kind of molding Mean Machine to kind of keep him active. And they're hoping that he wins, especially if they put like a more significant name in front of him in his following fight, because they can use him as like a plan B for Crawford again. Like, oh yeah, he's going to rematch him. And then they're going to market the heck out of Mean Machine's last like two fights. Like, oh no, he's been great the last two fights. He's won a knockout and then a unanimous decision win or two knockouts. And he said he's way better prepared to fight Crawford. And they're going to sell the fact that Mean Machine knocked down Crawford. Essentially, it was twice. It was one recognized one, right? But it was twice. It's just, I don't know why the second one wasn't recognized. It was stupid. But I mean, that's what I think. I think Top Rank is molding him to keep him as another opponent for Crawford in the future, especially sometime next year. What do you think?
I agree with you, but who wants to see it?
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, you know, that's what they're doing, but you're right. Who wants to, we don't want to see it again, but you know, that's what they're doing.
It was like when they signed, you know, they signed Chris Van Heerden for that short period of time. They were trying to, you know, mold him into a future Terence Crawford opponent, but obviously something happened and, you know, he managed to get released, and I think he ended up getting picked up by the PBC.
Right.
But it's the same old thing that we've spoken about God knows how many times on this podcast about Crawford and his opponents. And I understand it's not necessarily his fault because they're all tied up with the PBC, but they need to do something because he can't. I mean, I'm more excited about the Kell Brook fight than I am the Cal Velasquez fight. Cal Velasquez's first fight was good. He knocked him down. Crawford turned it around and knocked him out. Cal Velasquez does have a good style. He does have a good look, you know. He's a good physique. He's really muscular, you know. Powerful shots and stuff like that. But I think he's kind of made for Crawford. You know, I think maybe Crawford got caught a little bit cold and took it maybe a little bit too lightly because of how skillful he is compared to Cal Velasquez.
Right.
And I think if they fought again, I think Terence Crawford personally would go in there. He'd more switched on this time, and I think he would get him out of there.
Earlier.
It's the same old thing, dude. It's like, who wants to see that? We need to see some names on that resume.
I don't even think the Brook fight is going to happen. I really don't. I think when they were reporting on the ESPN broadcast a couple weeks ago or whatever, they were reporting the negotiations between Brook and Crawford. They were, and they, and they put a graphic up on the screen. And like, I know we touched on this before, but they put a graphic up on the screen saying, oh yeah, there's a report saying that Brooke was offered, you know, $2 million or whatever to fight Terrence Crawford. And it's just like, what report? Like, you guys are top rank ESPN. Like, you guys know the details, you know, like, but honestly, that was their way to try to put pressure on Brooke. That's what, cause they put it on the broadcast. Cause when do you ever see that? When do you ever see that? I mean, that was their way to try to put pressure on Brooke. Cause you know, I think from my perspective, I think they were having a tough time negotiating with Brooke and Eddie Hearn. I think he's still promoted by Eddie Hearn. So they were just like, you know what, let's just put it on the broadcast, you know, try to put pressure on them so we can get more eyeballs on the situation. And I honestly don't think anything's going to work out. They're either going to have to pay Brooke whatever number he's asking for, or he's not going to take the fight. And even then, if they pay him the money, nobody's still going to want to see it. Even though, you're right, I'm more intrigued in a Brooke Crawford matchup than a obviously Mean Machine rematch. But and I still might give, we'll touch on it obviously if it gets made, but I'm not counting Brooke out completely in that matchup, which is a lot more you can say about Crawford's past opponents, you know. But I don't think we're gonna see Crawford in the ring the rest of this year at all. I just don't. I'd be surprised if we are.
I think we may see the Brooke fight because it's been rumored for a long time.
Yeah,
rumored. I think Brooke's getting to the point where he's going to have to accept one of these paychecks soon. It looks like the Amir Khan fight has gone. It's kind of died down. I think even the British public now are probably just like, dude, that's been talked about for so many years that just either do it or don't do it. So I think that, you know, it's one last shot against a world title for Kell Brook. It's a decent payday, like $1.5 million, I think what the rumor was.
Something like that.
And, you know, Kell Brook himself may have that, you know, in his head where he's just like, you know what? He's like, I may be able to just pull off one more performance. You know, as fans, we always think that, you know, like can he turn back the clock just for that one night? And I'm sure fighters think that, you know, that's why they come back in the 40s and the 50s, because, you know, they just have that thing in their head. Like, you know what? I might just be able to pull it out one last time.
He might. I don't know. I know people say he's washed. I wouldn't use that word at all. I wouldn't use that word at all for him, but he's not what he once was, obviously.
No, he's not. You know, I think those losses to, you know, Errol Spence and Triple G and the, you know, the fractures in the eye sockets, you know, obviously
yeah.
You know, didn't help it. You know, I think fighting it, you know, trying to boil himself down to, you know, 147, because, you know, everybody said, you know, he should have been at 154, maybe even higher, because he's, you know, he's solid muscle. So I think, you know, just trying to get down to that 147 category was just, you know, he was taking a little bit out of him. There wasn't that top gear because he, you know, just starved himself so much to get down to the weight. But I think in terms of name recognition and in terms of fight, you know, how many people were tuning in to watch it, I think the Kell Brook Crawford fight kind of appeals on, you know, both sides. I think it appeals in the UK and it appeals over here. So
right.
just you know, hopefully Kell Brook eventually just decides, you know what, I need to take one of these paydays before people stop asking.
Right. You're right. Yeah. But, you know, I think right now he holds a little bit more of the cards in terms of the negotiation with Top Rank, because Top Rank is essentially desperate and they need an opponent for Crawford, like some type of name, because, you know, I don't know. I keep going back to my original suggestion for him. Top Rank should just let him go to Showtime or Fox and fight one of these PBC guys. You know, the guy's good enough to figure, like, the guy's good enough that he'd likely be a favorite against any of them, maybe besides Spence. I mean, but all of them would be intriguing matchups, obviously, because all the best welterweights are under Al Haymon. But honestly, if I was Top Rank, I'd be like, you know what? Forget it. Let's send Crawford over there, one-time fight with them, and we'll get it, you know, a unification matchup or against a Sean Porter or a Danny Garcia or a Keith Thurman. Let's send him over there. Send him over there and let him get a win. And then they'll show him, like, yeah, look, I came over here and I beat one of your guys on your platform. You know, like, I think that's the only option they could take. I mean, but obviously, you know, that's just from us looking in. I don't know how ESPN and Top Rank's contract is in terms of broadcast rights, but you know, which I'm assuming they have first dibs, but I think their backs have been against the wall for quite some time now, where I think that's the only logical solution. Send Crawford over there to Fox Showtime, try to let him try and fight and get the win. And he then, especially if he fights another champion in Errol Spence or whoever, and he unifies titles and he comes back to ESPN, you know, that's what they did with Jose Ramirez. And he went to DAZN and he became unified champion over Mo Hooker. And look, now he's a unified champion on ESPN. And I would say arguably that, I mean, in terms of popularity, more known, who do you think is more known, Jose Ramirez or Terrence Crawford? Who do you think? Exactly.
It's hard. Terrence Crawford is popular in the world of boxing as such, but Ramirez has a lot more loyal fans because he has that Mexican fan base.
Right.
And the annoying thing about your idea is that, you know, if you interview Bob Arum, he can say whatever he wants. He can say, you know, like, I've offered, you know, PBC this amount of money, and, you know, I've told them that they can have Terrence Crawford, and you can't get a reply because Al Haymon does no interviews. So Bob can say whatever he wants.
And he knows that.
Yeah, he can say, I've offered them, but there's no Eddie Hearn on the other side. There's no, you know, Al Haymon won't do any interviews. So, you know, he could be holding Terrence Crawford hostage for all we know. But right. we would never find out because there's no spokesperson for PBC, which is, you know, if it was Bob Arum and, you know, Eddie Hearn, you can go back and forth. They can say what they want to the point where they kind of corner the other one, and then the fight has to be made.
Right. No, you're right. Yeah. And I think Bob Arum is smart enough to recognize that he's like, yeah, he's like, Al Haymon doesn't say anything. He's like, so I can say whatever I want. He was like, and it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So, which is smart, you know, he's marketing his company, like, and he throws stuff out there. You know, I remember there's a YouTube video out there where Spence and Crawford met up backstage at one of the events, and they're kind of talking back and forth, and they kind of get into it. And I remember Arum shows up, and Crawford and Spence's posses are both right there, and Arum shows up, and then I think Spence says, like, I was like, oh, he says that Al Haymon, or Spence says to Bob Arum, he's like, oh yeah, Bob Arum says that Al Haymon is fake, that he's not real or something like that. And then Bob Arum is like, what are you talking about? He's like, you said in an interview that Al Haymon isn't real. He's like, that he's a fake guy. And then he starts laughing. Like, he knew, like, it was a joke, like, pretty much saying, hey, yeah, I said it on purpose because it's funny, you know, but he says it like it's real. But I don't know. Like, you always get comedy out of Bob Arum, but you're right, though. I still stand by that they should just let Crawford go to Fox, Showtime, PBC, and fight one of these guys. That's the only solution for him to get these guys, because obviously they're just going to rotate the PBC guys for years to come. So it is what it is.
Yeah, it's getting annoying, dude. I think every time somebody fights in the top 15 of the, you know, the 147-pound category, this conversation pops up, because, you know, we're always kind of talking about the PBC, you know, you're talking about the top guys, the champions, and, you know, you always go back to this, like, are these guys ever going to fight? So it's just getting to the point where it's getting old. So,
yeah, we'll see, man. The co-main event for that of that top rank at the bubble, Joette Gonzalez returns after his first loss against Shakur Stevenson. I think it was last year. And he gets the unanimous decision win over Miguel Mariaga, who's been one of those. Mariaga is one of those guys at that weight class who's been rotated around for these higher level guys. You know, he's that guy that they put in with, like, oh, okay, yeah, he's a formidable opponent. This was for the vacant WBO International Featherweight title. Gonzalez is back in the mix. I would say. I think it was good. I was reading a report that Gonzalez, they had offered him a couple guys to get back in the rhythm. And I think he had said that they were guys with, like, losing records. They had more losses than they had wins, but he wanted, I guess, a live body, quote unquote, to get right back in there. And Mariaga has been in there with a lot of guys. Obviously he's not what he once was, but, you know, he is a name, and I commend Gonzalez for jumping back in there. Because I think his name is, you know, pretty much back in the mix to at least get another title shot or you know, kind of get another big significant name in that weight class. I mean, what did you think about Gonzalez's performance?
I thought it was a good performance. You know, Mariaga has been in there with, you know, his only losses were to Lomachenko, Oscar Valdez, Nicholas Walters, all,
right,
you know, all former champions or current champions. So, you know, that shows, you know, kind of pedigree that he was in there with. And I think from after a couple of rounds, you could kind of see that Joao Gonzalez had him under control, was really going to win. It looked like a 10-round decision unless Mariaga managed to catch him with one. I don't know whether if Mariaga really had enough that, you know, one-punch knockout power, though.
Right.
I think the problem we have with Gonzalez is he's good, but he's in a very strong weight division. I don't see him being beating a Josh Warrington, you know, Gary Russell Jr. Shakur Stevenson, in my opinion, made easy work of Joao Gonzalez in the first fight, and he's a current champion in that weight division.
Right.
Your favorite, Kanzu, another one in that kind of weight division. That would be a good fight.
I think Steve Kim of ESPN tweeted that recently, that a fight between Kanzu and Joao Gonzalez would kind of be interesting, and they're both Golden Boy fighters, technically.
That's a fun fight. I think it's good. You know, Joao Gonzalez, more of the boxer. Kanzu really just comes in and just his constant pressure. It's just the amount of punches he throws. So it would be a good clash of styles in that one, and should technically be easy to make. So, you know, that's probably the one that we would see. But it looks like, you know, Joao Gonzalez this time, and, you know, in his previous run at the title, he always seems to go down the WBO route.
I mean, yeah, it's true. I mean, but hey, you got to commend, like, Golden Boy and Top Rank regardless. Is it like, they're willing to send, at least Golden Boy lately has been willing to send their guys over to Top Rank on ESPN to get their guys opportunities. I mean, this is the second fight in a row that Joao Gonzalez has had, and it's pretty much under the Top Rank and ESPN banner, even though he's a Golden Boy DAZN fighter, if you will. So, hey man, like, you know, in terms of Golden Boy putting it out there, you know, you got to give it to them. I think if you look at it from that standpoint, Matchroom and Golden Boy, at least in the last maybe 2 years or so, or year, they've, I guess, worked across promoter lines more than anybody at the moment, or am I wrong?
No, I would say so. I mean, Golden Boy have really come out on top, I think, on quite a lot of them.
You know,
when he sent over Tixaria to the Top Rank show, and he came back with the world title.
Right.
So, you know, Golden Boy, you know, sneakily in the last year kind of built a very good stable after, I think, me and you have said on the podcast, we kind of thought they seemed a little bit light in terms of, you know, world champions and real pedigree. They kind of relied on Canelo, and then, you know, Ryan Garcia popped up, and then you Virgil Ortiz. But, you know, ever since then, you know, slowly but surely they've kind of picked up a lot of world titles. You know, Josh Franco, Teixeira.
You're right, yeah.
Sneaky good stable.
No, sneaky good stable. Yeah. That's why, like, people talk a lot of crap about different promoters. They talk about a lot of crap about Golden Boy and stuff like that. And that, you know, De La Hoya might have his behavior and stuff like that. Or now with the Canelo lawsuit, as we'll touch on everything. But I mean, they've been around like since 2002. Like, I think that's when De La Hoya incorporated Golden Boy as an actual business. I don't want to even say that they've been surviving. Like, I think that's the wrong word, because that pretty much says like they've been on the decline, which I don't think so. I think it's just like they always find a way to, you know, make it back to some type of prominence or stuff like that. You know, obviously Canelo's the cash cow, but, you know, you got to give it to them. They're sending their guys over to all these other promoters, like, you know, especially Top Rank, and then it's working out. You know, the risk is working out for them and they're getting rewarded. So, you know, it is what it is. But just really quickly, the scores for that fight for Gonzalez's win over Mariaga were 97-93, 99-91, and 99-91, all for Gonzalez. So it looked like it was a clean sweep for Gonzalez. He's obviously going to be watching the fight, which is in October, I believe the 9th of October, between Emmanuel Navarrete and Ruben Villa, which is for the vacant. It's for the vacant title that Stevenson vacated, I believe. And Ruben Villa is a Thompson's Boxing, guy, I believe. I think he still fights under them. Mm-hmm. So, that's a cool thing. Ruben Villa, I've been following him last couple of years, and it's cool to see these, it's always cool to see these local regional promotions, especially the one I would say you would, I mean, I think you would agree Thompson's Boxing It's probably the most prominent local promotion we have here in the Southern California area. And it's always cool to see those guys actually work their way up and then get like on a big stage like that, right?
No, it is. You know, I think the biggest name that people would know would be Danny Roman. Obviously, was a Thompson's boxing figure, went over to Japan, picked up the world title, ended up unifying against TJ Doheny. And then, you know, then obviously ended up losing to Akhmed Melidov earlier this year. Right. You know, in the UK, I would say Thompson's is, you know, similar to like Steve Goodwin. And they're actually very similar in the fact that Thompson is a builder, and so is Steve Goodwin. They both seem to have the same job outside of boxing.
That's so crazy.
You know, it's good when you see those guys who are on the smaller stage and, you know, they're not earning that much money, you know, literally like a few $100 a fight to eventually work all the way up to a world title. Because it's like slightly easier for those guys that come out of the Olympics, walk straight into some good money. They could just literally be a full-time boxer. When you've got people like Andrew Cancio, you know, who goes to work full-time and then has to fit in his runs and his gym workouts, you know, in and around a full-time job.
Speaking of Cancio, like, he's poor guy, man. He's been trying to get a fight scheduled with Top Rank for months now, and they, for some reason or another, his opponent keeps getting rejected by the commission or something else happens. Poor guy, man. I don't know what's going on with him, but I hope to see him back at the ring soon, especially under a Top Rank banner. I think that's intriguing to see. Moving on, fight previews. This upcoming Saturday, the 19th of September, once again from the bubble in Las Vegas on the Plus, ESPN Plus, Jose Pedraza, 27-3, goes up against Javier Molina. Pedraza is one of those guys, like we talked about, like Mariaga, who's been kind of, I would think he's a little bit more elevated than Mariaga, at least in terms of their careers, but Pedraza has been one of those guys that's kind of been rotated around like the higher level guys in his division. But he did, I think the most notable one loss that he had was against Lomachenko, but he did give Lomachenko, there was moments where he gave Lomachenko a pretty decent fight, even though he ended up on the losing side of the matchup. But what do you think about between this fight between Pedraza and Molina?
Interesting fight. I think that, you know, Pedraza, you're kind of looking, how much does he have left?
Right.
You know, I think this fight's going to be up at 140, so he's moved up in weight. He's a good fighter. I actually quite like watching Pedraza. He does a lot of things really well. And if you were going to kind of teach somebody to box.
Isn't he an Olympian?
I believe so.
Yeah.
He's a good fighter. I think, you know, the move up in weight will hopefully do him well. And I see him winning this fight. I think, you know, he's somebody that Top Rank like to use as a well-matched opponent. And I think moving this up to 140, you know, he's going to be maybe a potential opponent further down the line for maybe Ramirez, you know, Josh Taylor, you know, Teofimo Lopez maybe when he moves up to 140, because Pedraza, I still think, still has that name recognition, in my opinion.
Right. In terms of boxing fans. Yeah, I think you're right. I think especially if he looks really good in this fight, like, you know, knockout especially or stoppage, I think they're definitely going to put that type of marketing behind him. And like you said, having him at 140, you got Josh Taylor, Ramirez, Lopez, who I think moves up to 140, whether he wins or loses against Lomachenko or not, you know? So yeah, I still think Pedraza has enough left in the tank to keep it going. And now that he's in a new division, like you said, at 140, you know, there's a lot more intriguing matchups, especially if he can keep that spark that, you know, boxing fans know he has in terms of talent. Also on that card, I can never say his name. You got to say it, Mike.
Efe Ajagba, 13-0, and Jonathan Rice, 13-5-1, in a big heavyweight clash. I believe this is Ajagba's first fight under the Top Rank banner since he left PBC.
Whoa.
Kind of good signing for Top Rank, really, because they have a lot of up-and-coming heavyweights. Obviously, you know, Pulev, Tyson Fury, right. Guido Vianello, who signed with Sam Jones. Trying to think who else they have. Jared Anderson. You know, the real big baby, as he calls himself, Jarrell Miller, if he ever comes back, another heavyweight signed to Top Rank. So, you know, they have a lot.
You don't think that the Top Rank terminated their relationship with Jarrell Miller after his last time? I think it's over. I don't think they're going to give another chance, at least not Top Rank. I don't think so, man. I think they had a clause in there just because he has a notable history.
The problem is, though, as you know, is, you know, being a hero and being a villain both sell.
That's true.
So whether they use Jerome Miller as a, you know, as a villain for the rest of his time, and because people want to see him lose, they'll still turn up because they want to see him get knocked out. You know, and are they gonna fight for the name of the big baby? They get Jerome Miller in there, they get Jaron Anderson in there, you know, and whoever wins can keep the moniker.
That's funny. That's true. Yeah. Now you're thinking like a promoter, Mike.
WWE style, that.
WWE style. Yeah, you're right. But I'd be surprised if they do, even though that does work in terms of a marketing aspect with that matchup. And like you said, Jerome Miller could be like a villain that they could sell. Obviously, it works. People like seeing the hero and the villain, especially in boxing. I'd still be surprised if Top Rank gives him another chance ever since he popped this last time. So they gave him a chance already last time, but I don't know. But you're right, though. Like, it happened.
Just think how big the fight would be. They keep Jerome Miller under wraps until the end of next year, maybe 2022. He comes out and Tyson Fury, Jerome Miller press conference. They can both talk. Tyson Fury can be the hero. Tyson Fury can tell the crowd, you know, I'm going to rid this, you know, steroid taking guy. You know, I'm going to get him out. I'm going to beat him so bad he has to leave boxing. You know, Jerome Miller, he'll do it. He's a payday. He'll play the villain. He speaks well. Look at him when he played the villain against Anthony Joshua. Perfect.
Right. You're right. Crazier things have happened in the sport of boxing over the years. So I guess I shouldn't be so surprised. I should adjust my emotions in terms of being surprised if that does happen. But we'll see. As time moves on, so does boxing. Also, this upcoming weekend from the Mohegan Sun Casino, a PBC event, in Connecticut on Showtime. Erickson Lubin goes up against Terrell Geisha for the vacant WBC Silver Super Welterweight title at 154 pounds. What do you think about this matchup? I think this is a pretty intriguing matchup.
It is an intriguing matchup. It was only 2016, the ESPN and Ring Magazine both had Erickson Lubin as their prospect of the year.
Right.
You know, he's only got one loss. That loss coming to, you know, a knockout to Jamel Charlo in 2017.
Jamel Charlo.
You know, Geisha as well, also a very good amateur, was part of the U.S. Olympic team. So in terms of pedigree of boxing, this should be very, very good, you know, for a boxing for a boxing purist to watch. It should be a very good fight. You know, I would say Lubin really should win it. I think he's younger.
And Lubin's only 24, right?
Exactly. I mean, he really should, you know, come again. You know, if he can get everything sorted, just get back into the win column, you know, confidence. He's, you know, he's still with, you know, world-renowned trainer, Kevin Cunningham.
Right.
So, you know, everything's on his side. He has time on his side as well. So just get back in there. A good performance against Toro Geisha. This is for the WBC Silver Super Welterweight title. So, you know, that gets him back into, what, the top 15 rankings of WBC. Slowly but surely, I think we should see Lubin come again. Just depends how much that knockout affected him mentally, because that was a nasty knockout.
Bad.
Yeah, first round uppercut.
Yeah, it was really nice though. It was a nice knockout.
Yeah, it was punch perfect, because at the time, you know, a lot of people were riding with Lubin and they were kind of thinking that, you know, Charlo was just kind of like a flash in the pan. He was just loud and brash. And, you know, a lot of people were saying that, you know, Lubin was going to go in there and school him, but he walked straight onto it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was probably just like the age thing, because the Charlos are a little bit more older, maybe had a little bit more experience, especially on the big stage and stuff like that. But you're right, though. I was surprised to see that Lubin was 24 years old. I thought he was a little older. I thought he was maybe in his late 20s, but he still has, I think you said, like you said, he still has a lot of time ahead of him to recover and really make his mark.
Essentially 10 years. You know, he's only 24. You can see him. Yeah, he's got at least 10 years.
Yeah. So I still think it's an intriguing matchup this weekend, Lubin and Geisha. But I probably lean towards Lubin, but it doesn't mean that Geisha should be counted out. That's a good matchup. That's a good matchup from a boxing, like we said, boxing purist perspective. Good matchup. Moving on that card. The co-main event, at least as of today. I'm not even going to pronounce his first name. I can never do it. Nayam Bayar, 11-1, goes up against Kobe Ibridi, who's undefeated at 15-0. What do you think about this matchup?
King Tug all the way. Has to be King Tug. I didn't even know who Breeder was. I actually looked him up and read about him for the podcast because obviously we had to talk about him. He fights out with Barry Hunter's gym, Washington, D.C. People will recognize Barry Hunter because he used to train both Lamont Peterson and his brother.
Right.
In my opinion, I think King Tug should win. Breedy fought a lot of nobody so far. This is kind of a step up for him. King Tug, same sort of thing. You know, obviously suffered his one and only defeat to WBC champion Gary Russell Jr.
Right.
In February of this year, before the COVID hit. So, you know, people were kind of high on him. Some people actually kind of thought that King Tug might actually cause an upset against Gary Russell. So just one of those things is he's just going to kind of look and see how much it affects him. You know, some people can shrug a defeat off, you know, and carry on. Some people, it kind of affects them a lot and they start to come a little bit timid inside of the ring. So,
I mean, Brady's 15-0. Like, I mean, I didn't know who he was either until, you know, we started talking about it, but, 15-0, I mean, I know the lower weight class is a little different, but I mean, is it from what you saw, I'm assuming on BoxRec, was there anything notable in his career so far?
Not really. A lot of, you know, like local shows, stuff like that, kind of like to pad the record out. I may be wrong, you know, this may be one of those instances where, you know, Breedy steps up to fight King Tug and, you know, we see how good he is. You know, he's fighting out of, you know, a respectable gym and, you know, Barry Hunter's gym in Washington. A lot of tough guys have come out of that. You know, the Petersons were both well schooled. So I could be completely wrong. You know, he might step up to and rise to the occasion. Big step up for him on Showtime. So
yeah, it's an intriguing, at least from the numbers perspective and the records perspective, it's intriguing. So we'll see if it pans out. But King Tug, I think that's one of the best nicknames in boxing at the moment. I always forget about him just because he's, you know, he doesn't have the large name recognition. But King Tug, every time I hear that, I'm like, whoever gave him that name is pretty good because he already has a difficult name as it is. also on that card, Jerron Ennis, 25-0. Goes up against Juan Carlos Abreu. Ennis is one of those guys to watch. He's already 25-0, so I would think after this fight, especially if he wins, and especially if he wins in like statement fashion, I think Ennis is going to have to be in there with a pretty significant name or a significant step up following this fight. What do you think about this matchup?
Completely agree. I think anybody that kind of follows boxing closely, they've seen, you know, Jerron Ennis. A lot of people have been tipping him as, you know, they'll want to watch. And I think this year should have really have been his, you know, come out year. He should have really have come to the, you know, the casual fan's mind because, you know, he's unbeaten, 25-0, 23 KOs. So he gets in there and he gets people out of there, which is what people want to see. 2015 National Golden Gloves champion, ranked number one as an amateur at the 141-pound division before he turned pro. Pretty much everything you can do, he's done, he's accomplished. He's got a good style. He's from Philadelphia, so he's from a big boxing city.
Right.
Unfortunately, I think maybe 2021 now, you know, because obviously he wins this. We're already through, you know, halfway through September. It's looking like, you know, 2021 on some of those bigger shows. And hopefully gets in there and fight some of the big names. And I think everything and every person in boxing thinks he's going to be eventually be a world champion. So
seems like it. I mean, who do you think following this fight, especially if he wins, who would you think would be a formidable opponent for him in his following fight?
The thing is, you've got to look at is, who's with the PBC. That's the problem that we have.
No, that's true. Yeah.
I know, obviously, a lot of people in and around his weight division are with PBC. But are they going to want to match them up? You know, you've got your Errol Spence, Terence Crawford, and Manny Pacquiao, Sean Porter, Keith Thurman, all those guys.
Yeah.
If you were a world champion, would you really want to fight Ennis when Ennis doesn't bring a lot to the table? That's the problem you have when you're someone as good as Jerron Ennis. Unless they're going to buy it, literally buy the title for him and give it to Ennis.
Do you think that PBC, and probably not, but do you think the PBC would consider sending Ennis to ESPN for a Crawford fight, just because Ennis obviously isn't on the name recognition in terms of business that Garcia, Thurman, you know, Porter, Spence, all them are. So do you think they would be like, oh yeah, you know, that's, we could do that? I mean, I still don't think so, because they really want to box Crawford out, but I think it's possible.
They're sending one of the, I don't know, lesser known names, I guess, but you know, he's still a star prospect, if you could call him that.
Right.
That would be a hell of a fight. Two very, very, very good boxers. And that would be a great fight, you know, as a boxing hardcore, if you could call ourselves that, I guess, right, if you watch everything. That's a great fight. And it's win-win for, you know, PBC. You know, Ennis doesn't hold a belt. You know, he could go over there with the chance of bringing one back.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fight I'd love to see. I think the problem with Ennis, I could just touch on, is he's that good but brings nothing to the table at the minute. He doesn't really bring money because he doesn't bring a world title. You know, he has that Philly crowd. You know, he has the PBC behind him, and, you know, hopefully Al Haymon will just start kind of throwing a little bit of money around to give him a title, because they're all kind of being held hostage by that small group of people for the last couple of years.
What about Virgil Ortiz and Ennis?
Great fight. I'd love that fight.
I think that's probably the best matchup between both of those guys at their respective careers right now. I think that's the best matchup.
That's one of those where I think that you'd rather see it with either one or two world titles down the line, you know.
If, well, yeah.
But like you say, it's one of those things again where the same problem we've had with Crawford is you may have to do it without a world title because you can't get your hands on a world title because they're all, you know, being held hostage. You know, look at Virgil Ortiz. None of them are in Golden Boy.
Yeah.
Not one world title. So that guy, he's got it hard unless,
yeah,
you know, somebody thinks they can easily defeat him and they just give him a chance, you know, because you have to get yourself, you know, into a mandatory position where you have to force it.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the plan. Hey, for a Virgil Ortiz, if they're going to try to just force him into a mandatory position and try to force the hand of some of these other world champions at 147 at PBC and Top Rank. But we'll see. But I like Ennis. I like following his career. And like, you know, I keep repeating, following this assumed win, which, you know, obviously it's not definite, but I think he needs a significant step up fight or name. I think he's ready for it. And, you know, obviously I'm excited to see where he goes from there. Moving on to the news and notes segment of the last round, probably the most talked about topic in the last week or so, and probably why a lot of people tuned in this week, because it's likely in our title already. DAZN, Golden Boy, and Canelo at odds right now. Canelo just recently filed a lawsuit in the county of Los Angeles here in California against DAZN and Golden Boy. It's essentially a breach of contract lawsuit. But it was also recently dismissed. And what I've talked to a lot of people, because I had a lot of people who messaged me about that, like, hey, what happened? Like, I thought he just filed it and they dismissed it. Does that mean that, you know, that he was wrong? But I was reading about it that they didn't dismiss it because it had no merit. They dismissed it because it looks like Canelo's attorneys or his, whoever he hired as his legal team, they didn't identify the legal parties in a proper manner. It looks like they had some trouble identifying DAZN, just because, like, I think even now, me and you don't even really know who owns DAZN, because DAZN is like, there's so many players and like they have so many different companies. I saw the name Performance Investment Group or something like that, and then there's like DAZN Global, and then there's like DAZN LLC and DAZN Group. Like, it looks like they have a bunch of different money or a bunch of different business names all over. So it's hard to pinpoint who owns the thing. But that's why it was dismissed, because I guess there was like an error in terms of identifying the legal parties involved. But I wasn't really surprised. I don't know about you, Mike, but I wasn't really surprised when this happened, when it was reported that Canelo had filed a lawsuit in terms of breach of contract, because obviously they can't concede on a fight, or they can't, that's the wrong word, but they can't agree on a fight for him and the whole pay and the contract details. I wasn't surprised when he filed it. Well, I mean, what about you?
You know, wearing my Canelo hat, you know, if you've got a contract for $360 million over 11 fights, I think potentially $35 million a fight, and DAZN have been stupid enough to put in, not put anything in there that they can pick and choose who you fight, then, hey, you know, win-win for Canelo, you know, like he can just try and fight Rocky Fielding and, you know, Yildirim and people like that and get paid the same as, you know, fighting, you know, a Kovalev or, you know, fighting a Callum Smith, then that's really DAZN's fault. You know, putting my DAZN hat on, maybe they thought that they had a gentleman's agreement, you know.
That's what I think, yeah.
You know, obviously, but like, you know, when you get to be as big as DAZN and, you know, you're working for a party like that, not to have something in writing, it's kind of stupid, right?
But I mean, you know, like there's also the Ali Act, like where you can't necessarily force somebody to fight one person, or you can't put that in the contract that like, okay, if you sign with us or we sign you, you're going to fight this person. Like, I think that even though the Ali Act pretty much seems like it's just a piece of paper, it doesn't really get enforced.
Well, the other thing as well is the Ali Act is only enforced in the US.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So depending on maybe where the fight is or whatever, I don't know how it's enforced. You know, if he's fighting a British opponent in Britain, then does it class? I know that, you know, in the UK, you have people that, you know, manage and promote fighters, right, where in the US, that's illegal. You can't do that. But it's supposedly illegal. You know, look at Al Haymon. Right. But, yeah, it depends really on what hat you wear. You know, if you're on the, you're kind of neutral and you kind of think that, you know, Canelo is been unreasonable because obviously, you know, we are in a pandemic, you know, Canelo's already a wealthy man. I believe that he did supposedly agree to take a small pay cut, but you know, the money that DAZN was offering was substantially lower.
Right.
So,
see, but like the whole terms of the pay cut initially, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but initially when they were reporting all these different details throughout the last month or month and a half or two or whatever it's been between Canelo and DAZN, Golden Boy, trying to get him a fight in September, Mexican Independence Day week or day weekend, like, which has usually been his date the last several years. I didn't see any reputable report that Canelo was willing to take a pay cut. I saw that DAZN wanted to reportedly cut his purse in half. So from 35 to about, you know, 17, 18 million. But I never saw anything reported that Canelo said, well, I won't take 50%, you know, half, but I'll give you like 20% or 30% or 15% or something like that. I never saw anything like that until recently, until the lawsuit was filed. That's when I read something that said that he was willing to take a 30% pay cut, but DAZN still fought back against that and they wanted more. I mean, am I wrong?
No, that's right. You know, I think I read it was from ESPN, I believe, Steve Kim's article. You know, he said that he'd heard, you know, Canelo was willing to take less. And, you know, I don't think we'd be here at this moment if it wasn't for COVID, because it looks like, you know, back in November when we were chatting to Team Matchroom, it looks like, you know, they kind of said that they thought Billy Joe Saunders was going to get the fight.
Right.
That looked literally to be a few weeks away from being signed. And then obviously the coronavirus hit. And I know obviously Canelo kind of offered to fight Avni Yildirim for a WBC title because the WBC obviously wanted to jump in and get involved in, you know, that great amount of money that Canelo is, you know, floats around.
Do you really think that Canelo wanted to fight Yildirim though, like legitimately? I know from in terms of getting the vacant belt, I get it, but like,
why not? If you're going to get paid $35 million,
no, you're right. I know why. In terms of why not, you're right. But like, I honestly, I don't know. Like, I know there was no way to get around Yildirim because he was, you know, a mandatory, or he was in that spot, which I say that in quotes, in air quotes, but
a mandatory that hadn't won for 2 years and his claim to fame is getting knocked out by Chris Eubank Jr.
Exactly. So like, if Canelo and his team were really, I know in terms of getting that belt, cause it's vacant and they can fight for it and get another belt. Obviously it's a great move. But if Canelo really thought that DAZN was going to be for that, and he's really getting mad because of that they were going to put him against somebody like Yildirim, who has no name recognition. And like you said, he got knocked out. He's known for being knocked out against Chris Eubank Jr. Then, you know, Canelo is not really the businessman that I thought he was. Like, you know, like can refile the lawsuit again by, I think, September 26th, I believe. They have a certain amount of time to refile, I think, by the end of the month. And then they can still move forward in the court case. And that's the first thing I thought of. One of the first things I thought of when I heard about the lawsuit is that, oh man, this could drag out. You know, DAZN, the guy who owns DAZN is a billionaire. He's like worth like $25 billion. You know, you don't think he has a team of lawyers and like some of the best lawyers in the world who are going to just drag this on or, you know, I know Canelo's got his own people. You know, I know Canelo's got his own people and he's obviously a millionaire and he can try to fight and all that stuff. But I mean, I think it kind of looks, in terms of who he hired as his legal team, I think it kind of looks, you know, kind of, I don't know what the error that they made where the lawsuit got dismissed because of an error as in not being able to properly identify the legal parties involved, which I get it. There's confusion among DAZN and who owns what, and there's a lot of moving parts there. But I think that like an error like that is such a small, minuscule legal error to make, especially when you're somebody with the reputation of Canelo, one of the biggest stars in the world, not just in boxing, but, you know, in pop culture, you know, like that kind of says something about the legal team you hired. And I looked up his legal team. They're located over there in the South Bay here in the Los Angeles area. But I don't know, man. Like, I just hope this isn't another Mikey Garcia situation. I hope that Canelo, DAZN, and Golden Boy come to some type of agreement and he gets back into the ring. You know, they're probably shooting for November since he fought November last year. So that's what they're shooting for, to try to reach some type of agreement. But then it was also strange to me that Canelo listed Golden Boy in there, even though they are part of the contract negotiations and he's a part of their, you know, their promotional company. And then Oscar De La Hoya was like tweeting and putting on Instagram. He put something like, oh, you know, when like pretty much saying that he's not worried about anything, you know. And I think I saw a quote by Golden Boy or somebody at Golden Boy that said like, oh, you know, Canelo's beef is with DAZN. It's pretty much saying it's not with us. You know, we're just kind of listed there, but we're irrelevant. Well, I think if you're listed from a legal standpoint in the court system, like that doesn't, you can think all you want, but if he's going to list you in that, like, and something, and the judge rules in his favor or something like that, like that means you're going to have to pay too, which I don't understand why. I don't know. The whole thing just seems like a whole big cluster. Am I wrong?
As far as I know, the Golden Boy are listed because of they agreed for Canelo to fight Triple G when Canelo never agreed that, but they supposedly told DAZN that they would sort that out. You know, they would have a Triple G Canelo 3. So they listed, so Canelo listed them in it because he's kind of obviously turning around and saying like, I never agreed to that. You can't agree to that without my, you know, without my blessing.
Right. No. Yeah. I think that was an issue at the beginning of his agreement. And you know, the following, when he signed his agreement, that Golden Boy had some type of written agreement with DAZN saying they would get Triple G as an opponent again, under DAZN platform. Or that they told DAZN, like, they promised DAZN, it could have been a gentleman's agreement. I don't know, something like that. But obviously that was an issue and now it's coming up again. And then, you know, something that just popped out in my head too, I guess in also what was reported, I don't know if it was in the lawsuit written specifically, but DAZN was saying that premium opponents that they wanted, they listed people as like Conor McGregor, Khabib, you know, and I know people were laughing at that and, you know, and I get it in terms of a boxing standpoint. I get it, like in terms of like premium, but like from a business standpoint, that's what they were looking at. You don't think HBO and Showtime and Fox and all these guys, if they had a chance to get a Canelo and like a Khabib or a Canelo and a, you know, a Nate Diaz or a Conor McGregor or what have you, you don't think that they would jump on that if they had a chance to bid on that? From a money standpoint, that's all they care about. It's all ratings and eyeballs or pay-per-view buys. So I get it in terms of like, it's a like, oh, you know, DAZN, I can't believe they consider them premium opponents. They're not even boxers and stuff like that. Yeah. From a boxing perspective, I understand. But DAZN needs to, they're paying the guy $35 million a fight. You know, they're trying to recover and make some type of profit here, you know, which, and I'm not saying like, I agree, but like, I think we would, if we were at the head of DAZN, I think we'd obviously have a different conversation, right?
No, I would agree. It's like, kind of like we touched on before, you know, if you've got your business hat on, all you care about is subscriptions and eyeballs. So, you know, that's why we're getting people like KSI and Logan Paul and Jake Paul fighting, because they're getting paid well, you know, and DAZN are getting, you know, subscriptions and, you know, eyeballs into boxing. And then obviously, if you're looking at it from a boxing fan perspective, then, you know, we don't want to see him fight a Khabib. We don't want to see him fight a Conor McGregor because they're not boxers, you know, and Canelo is just going to carry him and, you know, blast him out the ring the same way that Mayweather did.
Right. So,
you know, this year really has just been a write-off in terms of your A-star boxers, your Anthony Joshuas, your Canelos and guys like that. We're not going to see them. We're not going to see them. There's not enough money. There's no gates. We're not going to see them till 2021. You know, we may see, you know, Joshua Pulev, or, you know, we may see Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, if they can get some outlandish site fee where,
right,
having no crowd,
like Saudi Arabia.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, or some rich billionaire has it on a boat, you know, just for his private viewing or something like that. You know,
outrageous.
Just because of, unfortunately, it's the same old thing, you know, money makes the world go round, and, you know, money makes boxing go round, and those guys don't want to risk their career and, you know, and their life, really, you know, fighting for, it's a lot of money to me and you, but, you know, if Canelo's used to getting $35 million and they suddenly turn around and say, hey, we can only afford to pay you $15 million, then to Canelo, that's kind of like, well, no, I'll wait. I'll wait till next year.
He has to keep up his lifestyle.
Yeah, you know, and obviously, you know, me and you don't understand that, because me and you are $15 million. That's still $15 million, but when you're contracted for 35, you're like, well, you know what? I'll just sit and wait. I'll sit and train, and you know, I'll just wait until 2021 when I can pick up $35 million for fighting maybe potentially the same opponent.
Right, but then there's also the fact in the contract. Supposedly, there's something called a force majeure clause, which is pretty much like, It's pretty common in the United States in contracts. I'm sure probably in England or something like that. But in terms of if there's like some type of act of God that affects the business or the world or the region or whatever, where both parties are affected by it, or the, you know, whoever's affected by it, then the contract can be amended or something like that. You know, certain things can be done. So supposedly there's that type of clause in there, in the contract with Canelo and DAZN, and that's what they're going to rely on in terms of trying to cut his pay and everything. Which I think, honestly, if that's true, if that clause is in there, I don't see how DAZN can lose. You know, it's from a legal perspective, like in a legal court, I don't see how Canelo could win if they say like, hey, look, we have this clause in here. There's obviously a pandemic going on that hasn't happened in, I don't even know how many years, 50, 60, 70 years or whatever, maybe longer. And it's affected our business. We can't get a live gate. We can't get people to come in. You know, we can't have people travel, you know, for formidable opponents. I think from a legal perspective, I think the only thing that helps Canelo in this standpoint is that he's been trying to negotiate with them, and the attempts he's been making with DAZN, his lawyers can argue like, look, you know, my client has been trying to make attempts with them, trying to find solutions, and they're being unreasonable or something like that. But I don't think DAZN is going to let this play out. I think one of two things happen. They either say like, look, we'll pay you 30% less, or we'll pay you whatever he's asking. Because if this goes on, DAZN is likely going to have to produce their finances, so the court can see like, well, if it's really affecting you, we got to see it. Obviously, they're obviously affected, but, you know, and then all this stuff is going to come out, and then like a bunch of names that we've probably never seen before are going to come out, like, oh, this is who's in charge, or this person's in charge. And you know, DAZN, no company wants to let that happen, especially DAZN, because they're so new. So either they let Canelo just, they let him go. They're like, you know what? Forget it. This isn't worth it. And they pretty much get out of the boxing business. They just kind of write out the rest of the agreements they have, and then they get out and they focus on other sports, or they just agree to some, to whatever Canelo wants. And like, oh, I'll take 30% less, and they give it to him, or what have you. Cause you know, even though DAZN has that, likely has that clause in their contract, I still think they're in a really tough spot. They really are.
Yeah, I would be surprised if, you know, DAZN's contract isn't watertight. You wouldn't think that they would have be such a big, world-renowned company. And obviously, this is kind of their first exploit-ish into boxing. But you would still think that they would have legal teams, you know, good enough to make sure that they can get what they want. And at the same time, you know, if Canelo gets a legal team to look into it, of course they're going to take the legal action. Because if they don't, they don't get paid at right. the end of the day. And if you've got somebody like Canelo that you know is worth millions and millions of dollars, and you can drag that out through the court for a long time as a legal representative for him, you're making bank.
Right.
Win, lose, or draw, those guys are getting paid. So right. like when you see Canelo walking into your through your door, you're kind of like, ka-ching, here we go. This guy's going to get taken for a lot of money, you know, so...
Right.
I don't know, dude. You're going to tell Canelo you've got a case. Yeah, we can, you know, this. We can get around this, you know, because at the end of the day, like, even if it's the contract with DAZN is watertight, you're going to tell him that so you get paid.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we'll see, man. Obviously, so far, this is also a cluster, and we'll see how it pans out. But, you know, I think that they were reporting that DAZN didn't consider Callum Smith and Billy Joe Saunders premium opponents. I mean, you know, when they say premium, obviously they mean money, subscribers, you know, ratings, all that stuff, watches, listens, or whatever. That's what they mean. So from ignoring the boxing aspect of Callum Smith and Billy Joe Saunders, obviously they're premium opponents in terms of boxing, especially Billy Joe Saunders against a Canelo. I think we can all agree on that. But when you take away that aspect and categorize it as premium from a finances standpoint, what's your take on that, Mike?
I think they would be classed as premium when you look at DAZN moving into the UK market. Because obviously that was the reason they were going to fight them in May, was because obviously DAZN that weekend had looked at, you know, starting it in the UK. So that was why the two opponents for...
But you know,
we're potentially Callum Smith and Billy Joe.
Do you think it's realistic that Canelo would have went to the UK to fight one of these guys? Even though they probably could have sold out a stadium just because it's Canelo's first time in the UK. I think that could have happened. But do you really think that Canelo would have went to the UK to fight one of these guys?
Not necessarily gone to the UK. They maybe would have just had the fight at a more suitable time for the UK market. You know, they could have done it in Vegas, but done it slightly earlier.
Because
you know, that weekend was, that was when DAZN was obviously going to start in the UK. So I'm sure they would have had to have accommodated the UK market somehow.
Right.
I don't know whether the fight would have been in the UK. Canelo might have done, just because, you know, look at his career so far. He's done multiple weights, you know, he's fought obviously mainly over here in the US and Mexico. Maybe he wanted to go to the UK, see the market. He wanted to, you know, him and AJ are probably the biggest stars. And maybe he thought to himself, well, fucking AJ is selling out stadiums in the UK. Why can't I?
Right.
So maybe he wondered, you know, whether he could do that against a, you know, a well-placed UK opponent.
Right. No, you're right. I mean, we'll see. We'll see. You know, hopefully that, I think his team will refile by the end of the month. I think that's the date, September 26th. And then, you know, this also could be just a front. Canelo just probably said like, oh, you know what? Let's file this just so they can know like, hey man, look, I'm serious. You know, it's kind of like a tactic, but who knows? Who knows? You know, obviously we can just sit from the outside and watch what's going on, but it is what it is. Also moving on, Devin Haney and Gary Russell Jr. are still kind of going back and forth. You know, Gary Russell Jr. has been calling out Crawford, Devin Haney, like just kind of, you know, boasting about these guys, and I don't know where this came from. But Devin Haney, like, I guess, has, they've been reporting that Russell Jr. or Uriokis Gamboa is in the running for a November fight against him. I mean, I don't see Russell. I don't think that I don't see that happening with Gary Russell. If anything, it's going to be Gamboa. I'm like 99% sure it'll be Gamboa.
Totally agree. You know, the Gamboa fight seems more realistic, but Gary Russell Jr. against Terence Crawford or Devin Haney, fuck, give me that fight all day, every day. That'd be a great fight. Just the fact
Gary Russell Jr. against Terence Crawford.
Dude, I would just love to see that. Just the fact that Gary Russell just to move up in weight, all those weight categories he's going to skip to fight that.
I guess, to
keep going back and forth on social media, it seems pretty realistic. Like, you know, Gary Russell punched him back in the day at the Olympic training camp, and Terence Crawford didn't do anything. And so it's kind of, you know, it'd be a fun fight. You know, Gary, I would assume Terence Crawford would probably win because it's a natural weight category, whereas Gary Russell's jumping three or four weight categories to fight him if he decides to fight him. You know, Devin Haney seems to shout about fighting everybody and fights nobody. So, yeah, Gamboa. I would put my money on Gamboa, though.
Yeah, it's probably going to be Gamboa. That's very likely. And then Devin Haney has obviously the WBC title at 135 pounds, but they're saying that Lopez and Lomachenko is undisputed. and I saw an interview, somebody posted a clip of, somebody asked Mauricio Sulaimán about that, you know, about that issue. And he, what did he say? He's like, I sent it to you what I saw. Like, there was positive confusion.
Yeah, positive confusion, yeah.
I don't know. Like, the interviewer asked him, like, hey, if Lomachenko Lopez is undisputed, like, well, you know, where does that leave Devin Haney? Is he not a title holder? Or is that going to be another undisputed fight if the winner of Lopez-Lomachenko fight Devin Haney? Is it a second undisputed fight? And you could see, like, Sulaimán was, like, struggling to answer it. He ended up just calling it. He's like, you know, there is confusion. He's like, but it's the best kind of confusion. It's positive confusion.
I liked it the other day when somebody messaged the WBC and they came back saying that they were a non-profit organization. I was like, no way on this God green earth that they're a non-profit organization. Why would they have so many belts then?
Charity starts in their pockets. You know, it is what it is. Everybody knows, man, but, you know, it's fun to rag on these promotional companies sometimes, you know. I think we're always surprised, even though we know what's coming down the pipe, we're always surprised at what's coming next. So, moving on, the September 26th Showtime pay-per-view led by the Charlos, is going to cost $74.95. From a boxing standpoint, wait a minute, I can see your face. Obviously, people listening to us on audio can't see your face right now, Mike, but I can see it. I saw a lot of complaining for $74.99, and I get it. I'm not saying that I don't have any reservations, but from a, you know, we keep going back to this term, boxing purist standpoint, that's a really good card.
It is a good card. You know, obviously you've got Charlo Derevchenko, Charlo Rosario, Casemiro against Duke Mica, Danny Roman against Juan Carlos Payano, Brandon Figueroa, Luis Neri. So that's what, five world title fights.
Right.
Good, some really good fights, but it's just $74.95. Like,
well, what do you think? What do you think a reasonable price point would have been?
It's hard to say, isn't it? Because in terms of, like,
I think 49, I think 50 bucks.
I was going to say 50 bucks, but then at the same time, we've probably paid $75
right
for a card before where you get one, maybe two good fights because all the money's gone to their main event.
Right. That's what you're paying for, is the main event.
Yeah. Whereas this, you're actually paying $75 for six good fights. It just doesn't have that one marquee name, which I think brings the confusion because you're kind of thinking, well, what the hell am I paying $75 for? It doesn't have a Mayweather. It doesn't have a McGregor. But right. You're actually paying really more for the actual entire card.
Right.
You know, where normally you get, like I said, like one, maybe two fights, and the rest of it is just up-and-coming guys who are picking up a couple of $1,000s because the main event's stolen 90% of the budget.
I saw something on Twitter after this news was reported that said that, and it was kind of interesting. It was pretty much saying, I think I messaged you about it, or we talked about it on the phone, where it said that, you know, when a pay-per-view is announced, obviously you can buy it way in advance when it's essentially the price point is announced. The earlier you buy it, the lower the price point is. So, and obviously the closer you buy it to the event or on the day of the event or what have you, it's at the highest it'll be. So it encourages fans to buy it earlier because it's just say, okay, it starts at $44.99. They announce it today. And as the weeks go by, it goes up, you know, 49, 54, 59, 64, 69, you know, whatever, until it gets to whatever, $75 or whatever like that. You know what I mean? Like, so it encourages people like, oh, well, you know, I'd rather buy it now because I'll save $25, you know, instead of buying it on the day up, you know? I honestly think that's, I mean, maybe from a business perspective, I don't know what the details are behind the scenes, but I honestly think that's not that bad of an idea that should be ran like as a type of trial. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, that's not a bad idea, you know, just to see how many people decide to jump in early and, you know, saves $25. I mean, I'd be intrigued to see really the figures, you know, for this afterwards with there being really no marquee name on there.
Right.
It's going to be intriguing to see, especially with the, you know, the coronavirus. Are people going to want to jump in on, you know, $75 pay-per-view with no marquee name?
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see the figures for that during this time.
Yeah. But we'll see. But I saw a lot of people complaining, but we'll see. You know, obviously they have to charge that much because they have all these fighters have guarantees, especially the Charlos. So, you know, and there's no gate. So you think if there was a gate, do you think they would still charge $75? I honestly think it would have been more.
I don't know, because you said, like, you got look at those. I'm sure the Charlo brothers probably, their guarantee is pretty high. Derevyanchenko is probably a decent amount because he's had some good fights. Rosario probably gets paid okay just because he's a world champion. He's never really had huge paydays.
Right.
Casemiro, Duke Micah, Danny Roman, I think they probably don't earn a great deal. Neither does Payano. Brandon Figueroa, maybe. Brandon Figueroa seems to always get onto these, you know, Showtime, yeah, and Fox.
I think he gets some pretty decent paydays. Not crazy, but
yeah,
his consistency on these cards kind of might give him something.
Same as Lewis Neary. He's been in and around for a long time, you know, the world title. So I'm sure he gets paid okay.
Right. But we'll see. We'll see. But either way, it's still a very intriguing card. It's a very good card from top to bottom. So for $75, from a boxing standpoint, boxing purist, I don't know how many times we've used that word in this episode already. it's a good card. Is it worth $75? That's something you're going to have to decide. And also rounding off, your favorite of mine, Andy Ruiz Jr. And Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., the Mexican stars in boxing behind Canelo Alvarez, have been seen training with Jorge Capetillo in Las Vegas. Capetillo, for people who don't know, for our listeners who don't know or are not aware, Capetillo was the cut man for Tyson Fury's fight against, I believe, Otto Wallin. He was on our show subsequent to that fight, so you can go back if you want to listen to his interview following that Tyson Fury fight. He talks about that fight. He was on our show. But both Chavez Jr. and Ruiz have been seen training with Capetillo in Vegas. Chavez Jr. was surprising for me. Ruiz wasn't really surprising, but Chavez Jr. was. I mean, what do you think about that whole partnership right there?
The Ruiz one was just kind of odd because he kind of came out saying that he was going to go with Reynoso and never seemed to show up. He seemed to, you know, the coronavirus hit. He seemed to be just kind of training by himself. Next thing, he was training with Capetillo, and I was like, okay, you know, he's just in Vegas. He's just using the gym.
Do you think, I thought about that too, but like, obviously for the Reynoso, Canelo is the lead guy in their stable. And because Canelo didn't fight and they were still training him, and then Brian Garcia's still there and stuff like that. I mean, do you think they really just said, like, him and Ruiz just kind of split? They're like, oh, you know what? It's not going to work out. There's just too much stuff going on. Or do you think Ruiz just kind of knows, like, all right, well, I'm not going to be the priority here. So I'm going to go somewhere where I'm going to be able to get some work. Capetillo's not really a trainer, but he knows the business enough to kind of give you some work. And I honestly think Ruiz has just trained to keep himself in shape. And he's went up to Vegas because, you know, obviously COVID was happening up there. It was opened a little bit earlier as compared to California. But I still think he's going to train with Canelo and the Reynosos just because Ruiz is new to the spotlight. And he wants to be around Canelo. He wants to be around the Reynosos. I think he loves that attention factor. So I don't think that partnership is gone. I just think that it's on hold for now.
I don't know. I think it may be gone. If it's not gone, then I don't see the sense behind going to a new trainer, but then never going to train with him until the last minute. Because it's, you know, they're going to want him to do things the Reynoso way, which is right. Going to take time. It's going to take time to train your body, train yourself out with bad habits, and to train yourself into doing the things that Reynosos want you to do.
Or what if he has went down there and trained? He just hasn't put it up. I mean, just because like we don't see it online. I know he posts a lot online, but like, what if he has and he just hasn't posted it? Like, and him and Reynoso, they know that they've trained together. They just haven't publicized it. That could happen.
He might have been down there, but he hasn't been down there a lot because don't forget Capetillo's gym's in Vegas.
That's true.
And obviously, you know, Reynoso's is in San Diego.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of, did he want to be the big fish in a small pond? And that's why he went with Capetillo, because he knew that, you know, if he goes into Reynoso's gym, there ain't no bigger fish than Canelo.
No, right. Yeah. But we'll see. And then Chavez Jr. just showing up there was crazy too. I'm sure Capetillo, he seems like a really good guy. He was like, hell yeah, I got Ruiz and Chavez Jr. here. It's like, you know, I'm sure he's happy, which is cool. You know, good friend of the show over there, Jorge Capetillo in Las Vegas. But as we wrap up here, we appreciate you guys listening, whether you guys are listening on your drive home from work or on your drive to work, or if you're just listening to us in your home, you know, you're outside, you have some earbuds in or what have you. Obviously, we appreciate it like we do each and every week. And before we sign off, Mike, go ahead and tell our listeners where they can follow us.
It's going to be at The Last Round 12 on Twitter and Instagram. And obviously, be sure to join us next week for the fight reviews and previews. We've got the big Josh Taylor fight coming up on the 26th.
Coming up on the 26th. So for once again, for my co-host, Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This